Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, welcome to this week's edition of Blues Talk. Again, John, Dave, myself. We're going to look back over Leinster's victory against Montpellier last weekend, all the other European Cup action, and of course look forward to our game against Northampton Saints at the weekend and all the other European action. So boys, an away victory over in Montpellier, 35-14, pretty tasty performance.
Yeah, I was a little bit worried. I don't know if you guys were.
Yeah.
I figured that the guys we selected, while they were excellent, they might have got a bit out-muscled by the big lads in Montpellier, and they didn't. Far from it. Like they put out a great account of it themselves, and in fact, the front row nearly disimproved when the internationals came on. Maybe it's a bit harsh to say disimproved, but it didn't. There wasn't a huge impact like you'd expect for internationals replacing non-internationals. That says so much for our squad depth. Guys like Dooley and Bent, who are, you know, phenomenal guys to be not top of the tree. And we always say about Bent, he could be, he's the best third choice tight head in Europe. And, you know, Dooley's got to have a few words about being one of the best third choice loose heads in there. Because what's his name has got capped ahead of him, who's injured at the moment, Ed Byrne. So he must technically be third choice. Wouldn't be much in it for me anyway. I would have had Dooley ahead.
Show great hands.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
Be great hands, yeah.
Well, like John was saying about the fear of being out muscled. We actually took muscle out of the equation because of the footwork the guy showed. They took tackles on their own terms. They didn't try and burst through lads. They burst around them or at least got enough around them that, you know, A, they were able to negate their maybe power advantage, and B, free their hands to play a more open game and get rid of the ball and keep it moving. And what happened was we ran them into the ground. I mean, literally, we ran them into the ground. So by the time the hour came, their subs were already on and already knackered. So it was a really good performance. Every area was excellent. Every player played well, except for the lineout. We'll come to that. But every other area was excellent. Every player played well. We kept great tempo on the game. We played our game and let them worry about us instead of attempting to cope with their game, which is something that always slightly worries me. Sometimes you see, oh, how do we cope with the power game? We didn't try and cope with the power game. We just took it off the table entirely and made it a speed game and a technical ability game. And that's where we won it.
Yeah. And on the subject of footwork in contact, it must be something they really, really work on, because a lot of the younger players, and especially Caelan Darris, that guy is ridiculous in kind of, like, I've stood beside him. He's a big guy, but, you know, in the scheme of things, compared to most of that French team, he's not very big. You know what I mean? He's not enormous. He's pretty young. He'll probably fill out a little bit, but his footwork is unbelievable. It's Darcy-esque. When he gets hit, it's whatever way he's able to go into contact. He always seems to make yards. Always.
Every time he has possession, he puts a little bit of something on it in terms of maybe a bit of a step or a shift of his hips, so that when he does take contact, he takes it on his terms.
Yeah, like that's it though. It's footwork. It's all down to the feet and the angles that he's taking the contact on.
And you know what that then leads to is that they don't get turned over.
Yeah,
you look. He goes into contact and he's very rarely if the ball doesn't come back on his side. And like, you can see that from the stats. Like, you know, we've seen in a lot of the games, especially in the autumn internationals, and particularly England, you know, we had 55% possession and 57% territory. And we kind of flipped what a lot of the recent international statistics on their head, where the team with, you know, in the deficit of possession and territory actually won the matches because having the ball is a liability. Whereas, you know, we actually used the ball when we had it in that game. But like, you'd wonder, are Montpellier just really crap, or was it, you know, an outstanding performance?
Little of Colin, little of Colin B.
Exactly, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think one thing you're talking about the international game. One thing that these games did was they were completely different from the international weekends, in that the rugby that was played was much more enterprising and much more innovative than any of the international teams play. I mean, I'm sure you watched Toulouse and Ulster, which was a great game. Clermont were absolutely superb. Lyon were superb. I don't know if you saw the Lyon game. They were absolutely brilliant. Our game, teams who were attempting to play rugby and not just, you know, kick the skin off the ball, were actually rewarded for it. So maybe, I don't know, maybe we were saying last week about how the game goes in cycles. Maybe this is a new cycle that's coming along.
I hope so. But there was one fly in the ointment was the lineouts. Like, we lost 3 of our 12 throws. You know, it's like, it was 75% success rate. So like, that's not a very good return. It's not a good enough return. It's fine if you play Montpellier, but, you know, if you're playing one of the top boys,
excellent,
that could come back to haunt you.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you can't have as you often say, Jake, there's twice as many lineouts of scrums. So if your primary set piece in the match is your weakest set piece, you're actually in trouble. So sorry, my phone's going off there. So you do have to be cognizant of the fact that that's a problem. And it's been a problem for us for maybe, you know, best part of a year, where our lineout has been weak. It's not like there's some guy who's on the bench who's a brilliant thrower who's not getting a game. They all have the same structural flaw.
Is it Leo taking his eye off the ball by doing too much of other stuff and not getting involved in lineouts?
Irish hookers have since Keith Wood time been, you know, with one or two exceptions, like we say Shane Byrne or Jerry Flannery. Throwing in has not been the strongest part of their game. Murray Best wasn't a brilliant thrower in. Keith Wood wasn't a brilliant thrower in. Jay Flannery hasn't been brilliant. You know, we had Bernard Jackman, the Blaneys, guys in the West. You know, you look at the guys currently in Munster, it's not the strongest part of their game either. Rob Herring, the same. There seems to be an organisational issue with throwing the ball into the lineout in Ireland, and has been for the last 20-odd years, 25 years.
Well, recently there's seen a trend of converting players who used to be...
It doesn't help either. Position.
Like, well, for example, you know, Dooley was a back rower until he was 18. I didn't know that until it was mentioned in the match commentary. Tracy used to be a prop. So, like, these guys aren't used to... Well, obviously, Dooley's not throwing the ball in. But Tracy, you know, had to acquire that skill as somebody who was deciding to make his career as a professional rugby player. Not when he's 12 years of age, you know, up against the side of his garage, or, you know, when he's just playing rugby for the first time. It's not his natural skill set.
It's something that's damaging all the provinces and the national team, because you're getting into a situation where you know, you could be in a crunch match. You get down into the five, you get a line out on the five, there's a minute, 2 minutes left, and you can't, you can only be, you know, 75% sure you're going to win the line out. You know, that's not, those aren't great statistics.
Mm-hmm. So what's the fix? We haven't got any fixes.
Hard work is the only fix, and it's not going to be a quick fix either. Or you can just simplify the line out and just go, a nice looped ball to 2 and 4 every time, you know. But then that's
predictable.
That cuts off an awful lot of the field for you.
It's also predictable once they know where you're thrown. They're going to just put everybody up there. throw somebody at you every time you go there. Flannery always said that that's what it was, just repetition again and again, and throw it against, you know, a spot on the wall, throw it again, you know, just keep doing it, and, you know, and then when you're finished that, keep doing it. So, you know, which you get, like, things like that, like scrum halves passes, the same thing. You have to imagine that hookers and scrum halves are throwing balls left, right, and center all day and all night. So, you know, maybe is something else needed? I don't know. I'm not a coach of any kind, so I'm not going to be able to help you out, but somebody coach, needs to do something.
Some coach, I'm not sure if it was a golfist or a colonial rugby player, said that you had to repeat something 10,000 times to become proficient at it. Looks like the guys are only around the 5 or 6K mark.
I'd say they do 10,000 throws in a season, never mind in their lives.
They need to do another 10,000 then. Mm. But it is, it is the one weakness in our game.
Mm.
Both
Ireland,
yeah.
Leinster.
And Ulster, and Munster, and Connacht.
Like Munster, back in the day, Munster used to have such a strong line. Like, you just knew when they went for the corner that they were going to pulverize. A, they had the hooker that would find the man. B, they had the pack of forwards that.
Well, that's it. They had, you know, the best throwing hooker in the business, throwing to three primary jumpers. That makes a big difference, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a very proficient caller as well, you know, who could read a line out. But like one thing, I suppose one thing, just going back to the original one, we saw that the team being announced was the way that they stacked the bench, and it was quite noticeable that the tactic that Leinster, you know, pursued compared to what Munster did, by playing pretty much all of their frontline players, we were able to, you know, stack our bench regardless of whether they came on and didn't play as well. I mean, they were tired. They played a lot of heavy duty international rugby in the last few weeks. But when you still think of it, there was six of our, what you'd consider our starters, weren't even, you know, available for selection. Sexton, Furlong, Conan, Larmer, Ringrose, and Lowe. None of them were available for selection, or well, Sexton pulled out, obviously, on the captain's run, but still didn't line up in the 23. And you still got fellas, you know, as we mentioned, the front five. You got just Van der Fleer, kind of a man out in the cold a little bit as regards his national place. He comes back in. I thought he had a super game.
Yeah, brilliant.
Doris again, excellent. And Ruddock, I mean, I'd say they're going to have to build an extension in his house for the mantelpiece to put those Man of the Match awards on, because he seems to pick one up every weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think in fairness to Munster, their squad isn't as thin as it once was, but it's still a bit thinner than ours. They have depth, but not as much as we do. So they kind of they didn't have the luxury of, you know, not picking A, B, and C, but still having D, E, and F to come in. There were guys that there, like, they'd had to pick Stander, really. They had to pick O'Mahony. They just don't have replacements at that level available for them. We do, and we utilize them well, and that's part of what being a good coach is. I mean, we played all the last 2 years. I mean, we haven't signed a foreign player since Fardy, or so. I mean,
Tomani.
Apart from Tomani, but it's 2 years. We didn't sign a foreign player last year. We didn't sign one this year. The reason we developed that debt to allow us to do stuff like that.
Yeah, that's excellent. And like, even, you know, you look at Dave Carney again, he's not the most fashionable player, let's say, but he has to be pushing his name forward for a recall to the national team.
Well, he's the form winger in Ireland.
He has to be. I mean, like, I don't know what he needs to do to get recalled, because you know he's certainly he's gotten the ball down over the line. He's in the right place at the right time. And you know, like, it'll be interesting when everyone is fit. I would guarantee you he'd be make our start in 15 when Lowe and Larmer and are back in contention.
In fairness to the Irish selection or to the Irish coaches before lockdown, Dave Kearney was certainly coming back to the form he's in now. But the form guy, I mean, Conway was a form guy. He seems to have fallen off a cliff, his form. But he was certainly a form guy. And, you know, Stockdale was, this was before the pointless full-back experiment started, was, you know, one was a nailed-on lion. So the thing is, lockdown obviously shifted the goalposts quite a bit. Maybe the Irish coaching team didn't respond quite as quickly, or maybe their thinking was, well, these guys have put the work in. Let's see how they are right now. Now we know how they are, so it's a level playing field again.
But like, from motivational, as a motivational tool, it couldn't have been better. I mean, it's rewarded fellas who've won 7 from 7.
Yeah.
It's given fellas who've played hard international rugby a rest. And it's, you know, it's created that we're all one team rather than once the internationals come, you're out on your rear and we'll see you again in February when the lads are away playing France.
There's no sinecures anymore. The best player will get picked regardless of reputation.
Agreed. Why don't we have a quick run through some of the other results? Just have them here in front of me. It's interesting to see the difference between when you compare the two pools. In Pool A, all of the higher ranked teams played away from home and they all won. So Leinster, Bordeaux and Wasps won away from home. And with the exception of Ulster in Pool 2, all of the higher ranked teams, so the ones and the twos, Leon and Exeter were the ones, and Racing and Munster were the twos. They also won away, they won at home. Clermont beat Bristol and Toulouse beat Ulster. Yeah, so like, you know, the home advantage thing, there was 5 home wins in total and 7 aways, but kind of because of the nature of the competition, the first versus fourth, kind of skews it a little bit in pool one or pool A.
Yeah, I think the real kind of, if you like, fly in the ointment of the whole pool system or the whole ranking system was Toulouse been ranked a fourth ranked side. That was crazy. Like,
yeah,
I mean, I understand why it was done and you have to have a certain amount of consistency, but Toulouse would be one of the top 4 or 5 sides in Europe. They're not, you know, they're not number 15 or 16, you know?
Correct. Yeah. Like, and you could see sort of the way that between the two leagues. Now, I mean, I take it that there was, you know, a number of, but like France had 7 wins out of their 8 teams. The English had 2 wins and the Pro 14 had 3 wins. But like, it was, I also had a look at, if we sort of looked at the rankings. So 5 of the first tier teams won of the 6.
Yeah.
And 3 of the second team, 3 of the third teams, and 1 of the fourth being Toulouse. Like, you probably would say that they should be in tier 1 ahead of Ulster, I'd say, you know.
Yeah,
so like,
that would be a better balanced.
It was just like we're kind of saying, because the stadiums are empty, that the away team seems to have a better chance of winning. Like, I doubt if you looked at the last year's Heineken Cup matches, I couldn't guess that there was 6 away wins.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously the way the pools are set up, the way the teams are drawn, the way the tiers are crafted, and the absence of supporters, all this adds up to make for, I suppose, what you might call a pretty unique set of results where there's so many away wins, because away wins are rare enough in rugby.
But it balances out. Like, rugby isn't like football, that the better team in rugby generally wins.
It's you can't pull up the bus in rugby.
Yeah, and it's very unusual that you'd say, God, how did Leinster win that match? And, you know, it's very, very rarely that where in football, you know, non-league team could beat
Premiership
Liverpool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, they just get a glancing header from the only corner of the game that they get, and it goes in.
Yeah, but in rugby, a non-league team would be in casualty.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't just lose.
But it's absolutely true. I mean, you just have to look at what, like, Gloucester put out their, you know, their reserve team, and they got 55 points put on them. You know, like, just talk of, we'll come to it later, but Northampton talking about playing their youth team in their match against us at the weekend. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the gulf between pretty much your first team and your third team is enormous, especially at this level.
Well, for a lot of maybe not so much with us, but for a lot of teams it is, big time. Imagine what the Dragons' third team would be like, for example.
And the other thing is, it's interesting this year, of course, because there's no restrictions on squad size. So clubs, I mean, a team couldn't pick its third 15 because it had lost its first game in previous years because they were limited in terms of their squad size. And 10 of those guys have to be front rows and stuff like that. Whereas this year, I mean, Leinster have named all 70 professional players in their squad. Every other team has done the same. You can name all your academy guys, all this kind of stuff. So it's actually more open this year to abuse, for want of a better phrase, than it could be in previous years.
Just another way that it's a fucking abortion of a tournament this year.
They had to do something, John. What else could, I mean, we'll be talking about it later, I assume. But even at that, you know, the wheels are coming off the wagon.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll come to that. But, like, let's just go through a couple of the other results. Like, a match that's kind of relevant to us was Northampton's defeat at home against Bordeaux. You got to say there's a bad attitude problem in that team if they had four defenders around waiting for that kick and not one of them reacted. And the Bordeaux back running in got it.
I'd say he couldn't believe his luck.
Well, like, you know, Doug Howlett used to chase.
Oh yeah, the more causes. You do it, the luckier you get. No, but what I mean is, I couldn't believe. Not, I mean, he earned the chance through his hard work in chasing the kick. But I'm saying that I'd say he couldn't believe that not one of the Northampton players even lifted a finger.
Issa was a great man for that as well.
Yeah,
yeah.
He was, he chased everything, chasing all the dead, and all the Hail Marys and the whatever's. He chased them. And he'd also chase down kicks, conversions. He'd always have a run at a conversion.
Yeah.
Even though out of 100 times he might distract somebody once, but he'd still do it.
It's I mean, Northampton for a long, 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 long time were under Malander. And of course he's gone now and Chris Boyd is in, and people thought, oh well, this will be a new broom, it'll sweep away, you know, the detritus or the whatever from the Malander years, and I'm not sure he's moved that team on at all. I mean, we played Northampton a lot over the last 10 years between European matches and friendly matches. We've seen a lot of Northampton, more than possibly any other team, except with the exception of maybe Munster. We've seen Northampton. We probably played someone. I'm sure somebody out there will have the stats for it, but we played Northampton a hell of a lot. And
I'll give you a few stats here, Dave. We've played them 9 times competitively.
Yeah.
We've won 8.
Yeah.
Let me tell you this stat. This is a frightening one, right? We played them last season twice.
Yeah.
And going back to the third match that we played back in December 2016, we won 50 points to 21, 43, 16, 60 points to 13. In those three matches, the aggregate score was 153 points versus 50 points. So we outscored them 3-1.
Yeah. It's and then, I mean, and those are literally the competitive matches. So what I'm saying is there's a lot of we have seen Northampton a lot over the years, and we've seen that they haven't improved at all under Boyd. You know, over the last 10 years that we've been playing them on a at least annual basis, they've got worse.
Yeah. Like this year, they've played three league games. They were beaten away to Sale. Quinns beat them in Northampton, and Bristol beat them as well. So they've lost three. They've lost three from three.
Yeah, and they're obviously
12th in their league.
Yeah, it's
like they're not been beaten by Exeter and Wasps. They've been beaten by rank average teams, and you only have to look at like Sale aren't even in. Sale were beaten by Toulon, like they're not at the races. And Bristol, you could see like Bristol are no great shakes. Like Clermont, okay, Clermont are a fine team.
Yeah,
but you know,
that was a cracking game, by
the way. Like the previous week. Like, for example, Montpellier beat Clermont the week before. So
there's no English team bar Exeter. Like, Wasps won, but they were playing the Dragons, you know?
Yeah.
Exeter, and, you know, it used to be Exeter, Saracens, and everyone else. Now it's just Exeter. Saracens are gone.
Yeah.
Well, I just looked at the league. I know it's only three games in, but Newcastle, who came up last season, are second. But like, I mean, okay, it's three matches in, so it's not really. Yeah,
it's still relevant. But Exeter look like the only English team that are, you know, the real thing. And even having said that, if you look at, you know, they played Warriors and beat them well. But are Warriors any good?
Not this season.
No, I don't think they are. I mean, they seem to be in a bit of chaos as well. I mean, it was announced today that Adam Hastings is leaving to go to Gloucester. He's not left for the big money or the bright lights. He's gone to Gloucester. You know,
but like we said it before, you know, Glasgow are turning into a selling.
Yeah.
Use soccer parlance, selling club. They've got rid of Hogg. They've got rid of
Finn Russell.
And now Hastings.
Yeah.
You know, like, could you, like they were getting full houses because they were playing sexy rugby with some of the best players in Europe. And anytime somebody just gets to the you know, sort of becomes the cream of the crop there, it's like, let's get out of here and move to bigger and better things in the English Premier League or in France.
I think there's a cultural thing in Scotland with that. I mean,
yeah.
Going back hundreds of years in terms of, you know, moving abroad to sell your skills. That's where the word Galaglass comes from. You know, it's a cultural thing in Scotland. But I think Glasgow got to a point, they got to that tipping point where they were, you know, if not dominant, then one of the top two or three teams in the Pro 14. The next leap was to be one of the top four or five teams in Europe. And they never made that leap. They just never made that leap. And the guys who were there went, okay, it's not going to happen here. I'm off. And yeah. That brought the whole edifice crumbling down.
I mean, like, I can't understand how all this talk in the media of them chasing Ben Healy, when they should be trying to keep their own, you know, homegrown stars instead of letting them become wild geese and move all around and then try and bring some young fella in who's, yeah, a very talented fella who could go on and get 100 caps for whatever country he decides to play for. But he's played 10 professional games of rugby. You know, he's not Dan Carter yet.
I think there are issues around, you know, player retention in Scotland. I'm not sure bringing in guys is the way to solve them.
Like they went through bringing in South African guys,
and now they're in South Africans.
Yeah, like a rake of them. And like, with, and presumably had to pay them a fair few quid, you know, without getting any return, because obviously they used to have to wait 3 years for them to qualify. So it's a bit of an investment they have to put in for those 3 years before. So who knows what's going to happen? They could get injured. They could have a massive decline in form. You're taking a bit of a punt on doing that. Would they not be better off pumping their money into developing some of their youth and keeping their homegrown players so that, you know, people can relate to them, so that the Glaswegian supporters can fully get behind their team and those lads can go through and represent their country?
You'd think. I agree with you completely. It's hard to know what's happening. But I mean, to bring it back, we were talking about Exeter and we were talking about the position of the Premiership. I mean, some people were saying that the results of the Pro 14 teams showed that our fears of the Pro 14 were overstated. I'm still not sure about that, because I mean, the Premiership being particularly crap doesn't mean that the Pro 14 is particularly good either. It just means that the Premiership is particularly crap. Premiership sides were disappointing this weekend, I thought, with the exception of Exeter. Quinns showed no imagination or spark. None of the English sides really did. Newcastle were very lucky to get a draw. Very lucky to get a draw against Zebre. So,
yeah. Like, just looking at some of the other results, I thought Connacht were very unlucky not to get.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
like, I was just going to say, just my point earlier about saying maybe the weaker team very rarely wins in rugby union. There might have been a case for that if Connacht had have got, when Tiernan O'Halloran chipped through and he was gassed out of it by Teddy Thomas in the very last minute. I think it would have been a case of the second best team on the pitch winning.
Yeah, I mean, fair play to Connacht. I thought they were brilliant. They showed great resolution and stuff like that. I think that there was a reason why they were so far down in the first place, and that was because Racing were the better team and they took the foot off the gas and then found it very, very hard to put their foot back. Once you take your foot off the gas, it's very, very hard to put it back on, and I think that's what Racing found. But that's not to take away from Connacht's resolute attacking in the second half. And they could have won it. And if they had won it, they would have deserved to win it for A, the way they played, and B, for Racing's savoir-faire attitude.
Well, I was watching the first half of that, and I think it was
19-3. Not Safeway Fair, not Savoy Fair. Savoy Fair, sorry, go on.
I wasn't going to pick you up on that, Dave. I was watching the first half, and it was 19-something anyway. I can't remember what the score was. It was 19-6 or 19-3, I think. I decided, I kind of had a choice between going and doing something and watching Munster later, or sticking it out and watching that and missing the first half of Munster. So I decided to go out, and when I came back, I was shocked that the score was, I think, 26-22. I couldn't believe it. I thought, like, oh, yeah, they're three tries down in Paris, they're gone. No faking chance. So, yeah, I was shocked and also pissed off that I didn't watch the whole game. Fair play to Connacht, right? And I didn't see, but from what I've heard, it was pretty good. That La Défense Arena place is, I know it's only fairly new, but it's not a happy hunting ground for anybody. It's pretty intimidating when there's the big screen and all the fans, but even without it, it's, you know, you're in the home of Racing, and they have, whatever you might say about their attitude sometimes, they've got some serious players in that team. You know, they're maybe the anti-Exeter. There are a load of players playing not quite up to the level of how amazing they are, whereas Exeter are a team, certainly were a team, of players that are not quite up to the level of some of the other teams, but play as a team really, really well together.
You want to call them a gestalt, John? You haven't used that in a while.
I've never used it, Dave. That's one of yours. But yeah, anyway, fair play to Connacht. I was very impressed with their diligence. And they're down a few players as well, you know. They have a few important guys out. So fair dues to them.
Yep, absolutely. Munster against Quinns. What do you think of the late hits on young Healy? I think it's been a lot said about him recently.
Yeah, So they were a bit like, the first one was, what's his name? Why will his name not come to me? Second one was Marler, who really stuck to, like, he just loves a bit of dirt. There's a lot of fellas in rugby that love hurting people for the crack. I think Joe Marler is certainly one of them. You know, Stephen Ferris used to go on about it as well. He's Sean O'Brien, you know, people who like the big hit. So I'm not a huge fan of it myself, the late hit. I've no problem with a legitimate hit, but it's when the nasty stuff creeps in. Now, Ben Healy, while he's young, he's a 6'4" guy. He's not Joey Carberry, shall we say. He's not made of chocolate. So he is a big lad. He should be able to look after himself. But the second one, especially for me, was a bit, you know, because the guys just had it and you're giving it to him again. You know, yeah, it's a tactic. Every 10 gets targeted, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, for me, they were a bit on the dirty side.
The hits themselves weren't, I mean, they weren't red card offences or anything close to it. But they were late, and they were, it's like that scene in
Malicious.
It's like that scene in Die Hard where the guy with the rocket launcher says, hit them again, you know? Yeah, I mean, I think one of my favorite biblical verses sums it up, Hosea 8:7. As you sow the wind, so shall you reap the whirlwind. And I mean, Munster are not renowned for laying down red carpets and bringing bouquets of flowers for opposing out halves. You know, they've done it themselves. So, you know, karma's That's a true. Bitch, boys. Karma's a bitch.
True enough, but
I wasn't going to expect any sympathy for a Munster out half from Dave. Anyway, that's true.
Depends on the out half.
Well, you know, Quinn's getting all three of the back rows sin binned.
Quinn's are crap. Like.
You kind of know what the result's going to be. One thing I just at the time I was looking at it, like Danny Kerr, it's his go-to cameo is a little tap and go, and I couldn't believe Stephen Archer went for him. Like, you know, his whole back line is in front of him waiting to defend him, to defend Danny Kerr, and he still, I mean, it was just dumb. And it kind of gave them a little chink of light. It gave them, they had a guy in the bin, and then it sort of evened up the teams when Archer was sin binned. It was just bonkers.
I mean, if that piece of play was a comic book, you would have had a thought bubble coming out of Danny Kerr's head going, right, I'm going to take a quick one now, and I bet you their prop's going to take me out. And then the editor would say, there's no need to put that in. Everybody knows that's what Danny Kerr is going to do. Everybody except Stephen Archer.
Yeah.
Dombrandt, that's your man, Dombrandt.
Dombrandt, yeah.
He's a feckin' thug now, I have to say. I've seen him, very unusual name, but I've seen him in a few. He's a big lad, and he's a bit of a thug for me. Saying he's the devil or anything, but he's a bit fond of
a bit of biff.
Yeah, he likes a bit of hurting people, yeah. Which, yeah, it's part of the game.
Kind of a desperate Dan bring, keeping to the comic book anti-hero.
Sure. Yeah, getting back to the game, I mean, Munster were never in any danger of losing. Quinns were, you know, not great. And spending, you know, the majority of the match without at least one player is a stupid thing to do. But I was a bit disappointed in Munster, to be honest with you.
They showed moments, though.
Yeah, they showed moments. Yeah, no, they did show moments. There were flashes, but there weren't enough of them to, you know, illuminate.
But what's going to come back and haunt them is the bonus point. Like, yeah, in their pool, there was five or six bonus point wins? So, yeah, you know, like, you've got four games to shine.
They make up for the next match. Who's it against? Oh, yeah.
Clermont. Well, Clermont scored 51 points against Bristol. It was like a throwback to the mid-90s of Super Rugby, Auckland against Canterbury.
Yeah.
you know, 80 points scored in a game.
You call that a knife? This is a knife. Great rugby to watch.
It was. It was like basketball at points. One other, just before we move on to next week's games, one other game I just wanted to talk about briefly was Ulster's defeat against Toulouse. Like some lovely rugby from Ulster, but unfortunately Toulouse, they've got one fantastic South African winger that seems to be able to do things that most of us can only dream about.
There were people, I mean, I know criticizing Stockdale is the fashion du jour. And there were people criticizing them for missing that tackle on Cheslin Kobe. So I prepared a list of all the players that Cheslin Kobe hasn't stepped in world rugby.
The ones
that he hasn't played.
Yeah. Unless he hasn't played. If you've played against Cheslin Kobe, you've been stepped by him. It's as simple as that. He's the most devastating winger in world rugby today.
Beat a man in a phone box.
He beat a man in a mobile phone.
Ulster stood up pretty well. Though.
Yeah, Ulster played well, I thought.
I was impressed with them.
Considering that they somehow were a higher seed than Toulouse, I don't know how that happened. I mean, I think Ulster are a pretty decent team, but they're not a better team than Toulouse, and they shouldn't. Toulouse were the better team and showed it. I mean, Toulouse are a very good side. They're a team that could trouble the engravers at the end of the season.
For sure.
Anyway, moving our attention towards all of the games next weekend, we'll just run through some of the highlights, and then we'll come back to the Leinster-Northampton game. So one that sort of looks an interesting one is obviously we kind of tipped on it earlier. Munster have to travel to Claremont, that's just going to be a humdinger of a game. I honestly can't see Munster getting a result there.
But you know something, Jason? As brilliant and all as Claremont are at rugby, and they are brilliant, they're a fantastic team to watch. If they show any weakness against Munster, Munster will work on it and expand upon it, because one area where Claremont are weak, and we say it every year, but it's true, is that they are mentally weak. One area where Munster are unsurpassed anywhere in European rugby is their mental strength.
I'm not convinced it's at the place it was 12 years ago.
And remember, the ground is going to be empty as well. If Claremont show any hint of throat, Munster will go for it. So this game is actually a lot closer than I think a lot of people think it will be.
Interesting.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to it. Another game I'm also looking forward to see is the Gloucester-Ulster match. Like, both teams lost, so it's last chance saloon, I would suggest. Interesting that Danny Cipriani seemed to step away from Gloucester immediately. Was that because Hastings is coming in next season and he threw his toys out? I don't know.
No idea.
He must be knocking on Danny Cipriani.
He played for England in Eddie O'Sullivan's last international. It was in 2008. Yeah. 2008,
yeah. He's the great, unappreciated, unutilized genius of English rugby. Or at least that's how he's portrayed anyway. I don't know. I mean, there's an element of truth to it. But he's never really realized all the talents that he could have or should have.
No.
I don't know why he's left Gloucester. Maybe he realizes that they're utterly crap.
Maybe. But I have to say one thing. When he got sent off in Thomen Park against Munster a couple of seasons ago for a high challenge that obviously there's all the talk about the concussions now and it's all come into vogue. But at the time, I actually did think it was quite a harsh decision to be given. He took it on the chin. There was no back check. There was nothing.
Yeah.
He just shook. I can't remember who he tackled. He just shook his hand and walked off the pitch. I just thought, that guy's got a bit of class about him. I know you read all these stories of him falling out of taxis and hitting bouncers and the usual crap. But what he does on the pitch, there was a bit of class about him there.
I agree with that entirely. I mean, I remember that incident, and it was one of those which was a red card it had to be a red card, but there was no intent, there was no malice, there was nothing about it. So he had the right to feel hard done by that red card. Mm. But he took the red card, shook the ref's hand, shook the opposition player's hand, and walked off without dissent. So, you know, you have to give him credit for that. Gloucester are not very good. Ulster are a lot. Gloucester would have got absolutely destroyed by that Toulouse team. I can see Ulster winning, and I can see Ulster maybe even picking up a bonus point in that game.
Yeah, hopefully. One game we didn't touch on earlier was Scarlets beating Bath in the last line of defence and Custer's last stand. But they host Toulon. Both teams won at the weekend. So, like, we'll see. This will test Scarlet's colours to see whether or not they are kind of contenders this season.
My favourite player playing, of course, if he shows up. It is an away match, after all.
Who's that?
Prise.
Dave's player du jour.
His best player.
I thought you were going to say the Scarlet's guy with the mullet, Dave. I thought we might see the next reincarnation of the Irish style.
Steph Evans is one of the most exciting players to watch. He's a fantastic winger. He's one of the best wingers in the Pro 14. Love watching the guy. Fantastic finisher. Great feet. Great pace. Yeah. If Scarlett's can get
on, say it. Great hair, Dave. Say great hair.
No. if I want to see hair like that, I'll go back to a country and western bar in the 80s. But he would break your achy, breaky heart. No. But I'll tell you one thing, if Scarlett can get enough ball into his root and toot and hands, he could cause an awful lot of trouble for Toulon. He could break their achy, breaky hearts.
But don't be singling out him. What about Reese Marshall down in Munster? He's got a mullet.
Oh, that's a horrendous one as well.
Straight out of the 80s.
That's just because the 90s haven't reached Munster yet.
New Zealand. It's New Zealand, not Munster. he fancied a sheep with a funny... with a funny haircut, so he got one as well. Anyway, let's not go down that road. I thought Scarlets were very lucky and Bath were very unlucky to do that last weekend. I just don't know how did Scarlets did it, to be honest. I don't think either team are going to trouble the competition too much. One of them might stumble into the Amlin, which is the middle tier of the competition. So, or the Challenge Cup, should we call it. So, yeah, this week, it's anyone's guess.
Yeah, just one other game I want to talk about before we turn our attention was Connacht against Bristol. Obviously, Pat Lamb's coming back to the sports ground with half of his coaching team, former players, a few ex-players as well coming back as players. I can see Bristol winning that game fairly handy.
Yeah, it'll be emotional.
If Connacht start like they started against Racing, yeah, then you'd have to favour Bristol. If Connacht start like they finished against Racing, could be a different result. Mm-hmm. The only thing is, then, unlike a lot of teams that rock up on the sports ground and all of a sudden find themselves getting blown halfway across the Atlantic in the wind, Bristol will be well prepared. They'll know what to expect.
Yeah.
Yeah. There'll be no excuses for them anyway. They've certainly got a lot of
backroom staff
there that are involved. Obviously, there's two matches off this weekend because of COVID. Toulouse Exeter game and the Glasgow Lyon. Exeter have a number, inverted commas, of cases. I'm surprised that, you know, bearing in mind that the competition is so truncated, that they didn't have some sort of, you know, like we knew what was going to happen in the autumn internationals, that it was going to be a 28-0 victory and a 5-pointer given to the side that didn't have COVID or didn't have to cancel. I'm surprised that they haven't had something in place so that there's no ambiguity.
Is it lads getting together to decide who wins the match by committee or some shit?
Yeah.
I don't understand it.
The thing that I worry, I mean, obviously, as you were saying, Jason, during the Autumn Nations Cup, Fiji were 28-0 a couple of times, obviously because of COVID. So it'll be interesting to see how the EPCR talk fast enough to not do that to a country from a tier one nation. The interesting thing to see will be what happens to Glasgow. Glasgow are the innocent party in this. Because obviously they have to self-isolate because of close contact with Exeter. But they are also the team who can't field for the next match. So it'll be interesting to see, is there a difference in punishment meted out? Because there should be. I don't think Glasgow should be punished, nor should their opposition, by the way. But I don't think Glasgow should be punished because it's not their fault. I mean, it's nobody's fault. We're in a global pandemic. So take fault out of it. But they're not the reason that the game has to be cancelled.
But it kind of screws both teams if they say, okay, let's give a 10-all draw or a 28-all draw. So they get the try bonus and they get
a 3-pointer.
Yeah. Like, it's still going to hurt them, you know, in the greater scheme of things, because particularly Glasgow, who have already lost.
Yeah. Oh, it would certainly draw a line under Glasgow's hopes of progressing, maybe even to the Challenge Cup.
But, you know, I think, as you said, Dave, you just have to be a bit bigger than this and just say, aren't we lucky to have sport at all?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, 6 months ago, we did no sport and everything was cancelled and locked down. And we can go back to that, or we can just soldier on and at least we're getting to see it and there's a competition taking place. And yes, it's shitty that, you know, Exeter to lose Leon and Glasgow are affected by it, but there's still 16 other teams that aren't.
Yeah.
And let's just get on with it. You know, it's only for one season.
People have been saying that, oh, they should have known that this was going to happen. They should have had some contingency, or it's a hames of a competition. It's a competition. You know, like you say, 6 months ago, we didn't have a competition. We have a competition. Okay, so if we have to patch and mend as best we can on the fly, let's do it. But
yeah,
at least we have. The only thing I'd want is for it to be done equitably, as equitably as possible.
Yeah, but like, what I would really hate to see happen is, you know, somebody to say, well, we're going to take you to the court of international sport of whatever it is in Laverne and, you know, put an injunction on it. And
I don't think that would happen. I think, Rashad,
Saracens aren't in it.
Yeah. I don't think you're able to under the participation agreement, but COVID tests are fairly binary. It's one, you have it or you don't kind of thing. Unless you're self-isolating. So if a team can't field because they've COVID, that's fair enough. If a team can't field because they're self-isolating, that's fair enough. I mean, you can't assign blame in during a global pandemic. But you do have to find a resolution, and it has to be an equitable one.
True. Anyway, looking ahead to our game, I mentioned earlier we've played them 9 times in competitive games, winning 8 of them. Be interesting to see what sort of selection comes out, whether they reintegrate the, let's call them the frontliners, or the first internationals. Or are they going to continue going for form? I mean, I'd love to see them continue going with form.
Well, you see, there's a difference in form. I mean, form means 2 things. First of all, I mean, obviously, the form guys in the last 7 years, we don't know what's been happening in training this week. For all we know, Keane Healy could be blowing the doors off because he really wants that jersey back. You know, so they could pick Keane Healy on form. It'll be interesting. I'd say you'll see probably a similar enough selection, maybe a bit more of a blend. It'll be interesting to see what they do with. Will Johnny be back? B, if not, what will they do with the 10 shirt? And C, if not, what will they do with the 22 shirt? I'm a fan of Ross Burns, but he's not playing well at the moment. Harry is playing better rugby, regardless of anything else. So I would start Harry Byrne next week. If Johnny Sexton isn't available, I'd start Harry Byrne.
Well, if, as Chris Boyd alluded to, they're going to send over the under 10s, then, you know, doesn't really matter. I suppose we want to teach them a lesson if they do send over the under 10s. So, they, you know, don't be doing that. You'll get 50 nils. Or, you know, is it a opportunity to blood somebody like Ross Byrne and or Harry Byrne in international?
Is that what Chris Boyd says they might do? I mean, I believe that they're doing it when I see the team. EPCR have always reacted very strongly to teams who pick deliberately understrength teams. We saw what happened to Agen. We saw Bourgoin got some fairly hefty slaps on the wrist and fines over the last couple of years. So we'll see what happens. I mean, going out and saying you're going to do it in an interview and then doing it is only going to mean a fine. I guarantee you're getting a fine. Saying you're going to do it and then not doing it is another matter.
I went through the Northampton website earlier on, and I just went through their squad. It's quite thin on the ground for, you know, big name global superstars or European superstars. Obviously, Dan Biggar is there, Owen Franks, Courtney Laws, Tom Wood. Very few else. Like, they don't have huge squad depth, you know, with quality international standard players.
You see, it's like Samson's hair. When they cut down the hedge in Franklin's gardens, it took all their strength with them. Remember that lovely green and yellow hedge they used to have run along the side of the pitch? They cut that down. Now karma.
You reckon that's it?
I reckon that hedge was their magic. It was their Samson's hair. No, they don't have the deepest squad. The thing is, as I was saying earlier, I mean the current relaxation on squad numbers due to the pandemic, makes it easier for teams to do this because they do have, you know, I mean Leinster have 70 players registered. I'm sure not everyone will do that, but you know, you couldn't do that when you had 42 players registered because you only had so many players.
Yeah. So look, I suppose you just got to say this fixture, you know, a couple of seasons ago, like they beat us in the return leg, well, not a couple of seasons ago, I think it was 2014, was it?
Jamie Heaslip gave away he was on their line with the line at their mercy. And, you know, that's our only loss against them. And your man, the winger,
George North,
hit the length of the field from his own try line. And
George North was playing in the centre that day.
He scored his first ever European try in that match.
There you go.
Yeah. Their team that weekend was, they're after getting stuffed in Franklin's Gardens the week before. Remember Luke Fitzgerald's try when O'Driscoll put it through his legs to him? Yeah. You know, we just played rugby from a different planet that day.
We did the battle on Saturday as well. It was just a different planet entirely.
Yeah. But I tell you what, they did have, like, Saints had a serious amount of pride.
Yeah.
That they said, we got seriously dicked by Leinster. We're not letting it happen again. And they came out all guns blazing. And, you know, fair play to them. They stole the points off us that day.
Can we blame it on Matt O'Connor? Please, can we?
No, blame it on Joe Schmidt.
Matt O'Connor was the coach.
Well, yeah, but apparently the reason we played so well in the first leg was because of Joe Schmidt. So he's obviously the reason why we played so badly in the return.
Fair enough.
But, you know, I don't see them like they had a significant defeat at the weekend. Like, I don't see them coming out and, you know, all guns blazing this time around.
They're not what they want.
It just underlines what a naff competition it is, you know, how, you know, one loss and it's, you know, it's all gone. And, yeah, it's just, it's hard to get as excited about it. I know it's COVID and I know there's loads of reasons why it is the way it is, but I think this competition has gone in the wrong direction since they changed it in 2000 and whenever the hell it was, 14. 13, 12, 15, whenever it was, anyway, I think it was 14. Okay, before that, there was little anomalies like the Italians always having a team and yada, yada. So in some ways, having it more merit-based was a good thing, but look what's happened to the competition. It's just not as captivating for anyone. I mean, it's not as if the English or the French fans are really bought into it.
No.
Since...
I mean, the Premiership are not the world's greatest decision makers. They're certainly not the world's greatest business minds. We saw that with Saracens. We've seen it with the way that the position their clubs are in. We've seen it. Did you see the BT Sport deal?
No.
BT Sport, they turned down BT Sport's final offer of $40 million a year and then went back and have now accepted a 3-year deal at $110 million.
Okay.
So they managed to cost themselves $10 million.
Yeah, well, they probably turned it down before COVID, I'd say, did they?
No.
No?
They were looking to get their own dedicated rugby channel. You know, on the Sky platform, they have a Formula One and an NFL. Yeah. And they wanted BT to have their own dedicated rugby channel. And this was under negotiation. And I don't know whether BT were willing to do that, but $40 million was offered to them in, it was certainly floated in August, back as far as August. And now they've obviously taken a lesser deal.
Mad.
But like, I mean, it's got to be significantly more than the Pro 14 clubs are getting.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, there's a significantly bigger population. It's an older competition. That's what was surprising. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's not going to go back into the game anyway. It's money that's going to exit the game. And all the CVC money's gone now.
Yeah. All theirs is gone too.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. It's been swallowed up by the last 12 months. So...
Hmm.
I mean, the professional game is in quite serious problem. I mean, it's not just rugby. League One has lost its TV deal. League One signed a huge TV deal. This is the French Football League. Signed a huge TV deal with Spanish company Media Pro, who haven't made their last couple of payments and are pulling the deal. Professional sport, the days of the mega deal are over. The exception maybe of the Premier League, the days of the mega deal are over. Because there isn't enough money going around and people aren't willing to pay it out anymore. So,
but like
there's
so many different subscriptions that you need to pay. I mean, you know, you get your basic Sky package or your Sky box in your house, then you got to pay Air Sport, BT Sport. If you want Sky Sports, throw that in as well. If you want that, you know, some football matches are on Amazon, so you got to buy that. Like, you know, if you want to watch sports, you're going to have to pay for it. And what's the other side of the coin? Like at the moment, I heard an ad actually today on the radio for Catherine Martin wanting proposals of what sports
of the significance
she wants, what the public wants to include on the free to wear list. Like, you know, we can all say, oh, I want the All Irelands and we want the Six Nations and we want the Heineken Cup and we want the Irish Derby and the Aga Khan and all these things. How do they survive if they're all free to wear? Like they make their money, you know, through, like if you want, for just stick to rugby. If you want rugby to remain viable professional sport in Ireland, I'm sorry, you need a big TV deal because there ain't, you know, Bank of Ireland pay them 1.2 million a year. That's small potatoes when Liverpool get $40 million from Standard Charter and $35 million from Nike.
I agree with you, Jason. I would say the other side of that is Bank of Ireland would pay a lot more if they were free to air. Stands to reason. I mean, you're talking about,
would they take? Like, yeah, like you know, Bank of Ireland don't have. If you know,
a match in air sport.
But just to finish for a second, Bank of Ireland don't have $40 million. Like,
I'm not saying they're going to pay that much money, but what I'm saying is the value of the deal to Bank of Ireland would be more if the game were on free to air, because you just have so much more eyeballs on their brand than you do have on a very narrow. I mean, subscription television, right. They don't care about how many people, they don't care if nobody watches because people have paid their subscription. Whereas free to air, you have to have the numbers.
Would you not rather watch Leinster play every week rather than, well, Leinster on this weekend, because RT, for example,
I'm not arguing against that. I agree with that. I agree with you. But all I'm saying is purely from an eyeballs point of view, free to air has massively bigger viewership than subscription.
I 100% get that. I'm just trying to argue back to say, like, that's all well and good, but Leinster can't be on telly every weekend if it's on, if it's supposed to be spread across the competition. So Bank of Ireland ain't going to get eyeballs on their jersey or Adidas or Leia Healthcare or whoever is the, you know, the sponsors if Leinster are only on, once every 4 weeks,
That would give them an increase than what they're getting on.
I'm sure. Okay, maybe it would.
Yeah, it would. Well, I mean, the figures are massively bigger.
Yeah, no, I understand that, but like, they're just. I just think that if you as a fan or me as a fan want to watch our team on television,
well, it has to be late games.
It has to be on prescription subscription. I can't see
the Heineken Cup, particularly the way it's gone the last few years, making the criteria to be on the protected list. I just don't. It's not culturally significant. It's as simple as that. And it has to be culturally significant for the whole country, not just the people who follow the sport. That's one of the criteria. And it has to have what is it? There has to be a 5% viewership figure or something like that. And that's why the Aga Khan is going to drop off the protected list this year, the Nations Cup, because it doesn't have the viewership. People aren't as interested in it as they once were. The big difficulty is that if you put it on the protected list, then the deal, competitions that do group negotiations, like the Six Nations does, like the Heineken Cup does, can't go into those negotiations unencumbered. They can't have a negotiation with BT Sport and say, look, like we say to Six Nations, Six Nations can't go to Sky Sports and say, look, here's the whole competition, exclusive, if you give us 100 million, because three of the games are going to be on free-to-air television because the deal is encumbered by that list. And that's the point the IRFU have made repeatedly. And they've kind of gotten around it because a free-to-air television channel has bought the rights in and of itself. But if the deal is encumbered, it will affect other revenue streams. Personally, I think that I think professional sport, to a certain extent, has to go on subscription channel to an element, but it does kill viewership, and it has an effect on people taking up the sport at a younger age.
Well, I'd love to come back to that, but we're kind of a bit short for time. Before we go, I just really want to rattle off and mention that the Rugby World Cup draw was announced during the week. We've got a humdinger. We play South Africa, Scotland again, and Asia Pacific and Europe too. But unfortunately, it means that the Pool B will end up playing against either runners-up or winners of Pool A, which includes New Zealand, France. You wonder whether France as hosts are going to win their pool, because they beat them in when it was held in France in 07.
It's going to be 2028 before Ireland win a pool match or win a knockout match in the World Cup. Pretty much. That's not very.
Well, we'll have plenty of practice playing New Zealand because we're probably going to play them four times between now and then. We have them in the autumn and then we're touring three-match test series in the summer, so.
You just never know. That's the beauty of sport.
Yeah, well, hopefully we will we'll all be around to find out in 3 years' time. Surprising that they did it so far out. I mean, it's 2 years and 8 months away. I know they do, but it just always seems so strange that they do it so far out.
You don't even know all the teams that are going to be in it, and they do this shit. Anyway.
Anyway, boys, as ever, are your Christmas trees falling down? Anyway, as
ever. Your house is falling down. Better go and pick it up.
As ever, boys, thanks a million. Thanks a million for watching. If you are following us on Facebook or Twitter, please give us a like and a subscription and a thumbs up, as Dave has given there. Thanks again. Cheers.
See
you.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.